NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at Eaton Chapel on the campus of Beloit College in Beloit, Wisconsin, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. You guys are great. Thank you. There's kind, and then there's cheeseheads. What can we say? Thank you. We have a great show for you today. But first, on last week's show, we were talking about the game of croquet. And panelist Roxanne Roberts asked a question.
Is this where sticky wicket comes from?
As a matter of fact, sticky wickets come from croquet. And then we got emails from about, I need to check my figures, 30 million listeners pointing out that, no, we were wrong. The term sticky wicket comes from cricket, of course. Look, I knew that. I just made an intentional error so as to allow you, the public radio audience, to engage in what our focus groups tell us is your favorite pastime, feeling superior. So, if you're so smart, give us a call, play our games. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Philippa from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hey, Cambridge, my old haunts. What do you do there?
I am a resident tutor in one of the dorms at Harvard College.
Are you really?
Yes, I really am.
Oh, my gosh. Do they behave as badly as I used to back in the day?
Well, you know Harvard students. They get up to no good.
They do, except they do it in such a pretentious way.
I don't think that's very fair. They're pretty good. I love my students a lot.
That's great. Well, welcome to the show, Philippa. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe and the author, most recently, of Moving the Chains, Tom Brady and the Pursuit of Everything, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Philippa. Do you have to work your way up to being a resident tutor? Do you have to be like a resident Plantagenet first? See,
no,
she had a British accent, so I know she'd get that one.
It's usually a job handed out to graduate students and their lucky spouses, and I am a lucky spouse.
Oh, lucky you.
Yes, lucky me.
Next, say hello to a comedian who will be appearing at the Ohio Theater in Cleveland on Friday, October 26th, Paula Poundstone.
Hello, Paula.
Hey, Philippa.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author of Longtime Leaving Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, Roy.
Hi. Is it true that you can always tutor a Harvard man, but you can't tutor him much?
I can't say I've ever heard that before, but sure, it rings true.
Philippa, welcome to our show. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle right now is going to recreate three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl right here will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
This is a lot like Law and Order. It has a huge cast, the series seems to go on forever, and he shows up at the end.
That was Mitt Romney, or more accurately, Mitt Romney's gag writers. In a GOP presidential debate this week,
what an awful job. I've heard of jobs.
Dirty job being Mitt Romney's.
Mitt Romney's gag writer.
Yeah, well, we presume he had some because he pretty much laid out a prefabricated joke about the debut, at least debate-wise, of whom?
That would be Fred Thompson.
Exactly right. Fred Thompson. The strangely foghorn, leghorn-like ex-senator from Tennessee finally showed his face with the other candidates at a debate in Michigan. Turns out it is a very jowly face. Thompson played the same lowered expectations game that President Bush has used so successfully in his campaign. No, it's true. One pundit said that he would win the debate as long as he didn't, quote, fall asleep, throw up, or drool.
Ooh.
And he didn't. He didn't, so let's give him the nuclear launch codes. Why not? Actually, Thompson responded to Romney's little joke that you heard by saying, quote, and to think, I thought I was going to be the best actor on the stage, which so discombobulated Mr. Romney that Romney's handlers had to reboot his software. Did you guys by any chance watch, as I'm sure you would be inclined to watch the GOP debate to see how Mr. Thompson
did. I was on the edge of my seat.
Another great thing about Fred Thompson came out this week is that you may remember that he was involved as a minority counsel during the Watergate hearings. And somebody found a bit from the White House tapes during that time.
Or as we like to call them, the gifts that keep on giving.
Yes, exactly. In which President Nixon himself discussed the then young Mr. Thompson and said he was not very bright, but friendly. All right, very good, Philippa. Here is your next quote.
I don't want to sound like I've made no mistakes. I'm confident I have. I just haven't... You just put me under the spot here. And maybe I'm not as quick on my feet as I should be in coming up with one.
That was a powerful woman in Congress who once criticized President Bush for saying he couldn't think of a mistake he'd made in office. And she was now answering the same question pretty much the same way. Who was it?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Well, a woman in Congress, a very powerful woman in Congress.
Nancy Pelosi?
It was Nancy Pelosi, yes. Turns out, and really, what are the odds here, that both our president and our Speaker of the House are perfect? Aren't we lucky? Pelosi was doing a press availability to promote the Democrats' flawless record in control of the House. And weirdly, the only time she showed real anger in her wide-ranging discussion was when she was talking about the anti-war protesters who have camped out in front of her home. She said that if they were just homeless people, she could have them arrested, but since they're protesters, the First Amendment protects them. Damn you, James Madison. Didn't you anticipate that Madame Speaker would want to take cocktails in the veranda undisturbed? The good thing, though, is that because she said that, Ms. Pelosi will now have material the next time someone asks her to name a mistake. She said the protesters have put up a big Buddha. It's right outside her window, a big inflatable Buddha.
They have inflatable Buddhas?
Apparently, or inflatable or stuffed.
You can like go down to the Buddha store and buy like one of those big like...
Well, it's great about
that. Do they double as snowmen for Christmas?
No. He starts at Siddhartha, and then you inflate him, and he's the Buddha. So it's the whole enlightenment.
Why is he fat? Why is Buddha fat? Should I know that?
I don't know. I haven't done a lot of study of Buddhism.
He wasn't always fat. No, he let himself go after a while. Once you've attained enlightenment, who cares, you know? Eat the carbs.
All right, Philippa, very good. Here is your last quote.
Maybe all they needed was to have a lunch break, and it just got misconstrued as a strike.
That was auto industry expert Jeremy Anwill wondering to the Los Angeles Times about the strangely short strike this week against what company?
Chrysler.
In fact, yes, Chrysler. Last month, the United Auto Workers walked out in General Motors, and then realizing they had left the oven on, walked back in just 2 days later. Eager to break that record, the workers at Chrysler walked off the job for all of 6 hours. They only had time to sing, "Which side are you?" Some people are calling it a, quote, Hollywood strike, meaning it looks like a strike. It's a strike show, but it doesn't really force the workers to endure any hardships, such as discovering how awful daytime TV really is. Next up, Ford, where workers are negotiating to be able to get everything they demand by merely covering their eyes with their hands and pretending to be invisible. For a few minutes. Carl, how did Philippa do?
Philippa did very well, Peter. She had 3 correct answers, so Philippa, you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philippa.